Thanks for listening to the Jason Smith Show with Mike Harmon podcast. Be sure to catch us live every weeknight, 10 p.m. to 2 a.m. Eastern, 7 to 11 p.m. Pacific on Fox Sports Radio. Find your local station for the Jason Smith Show with Mike Harmon at foxsportsradio.com or stream us live every night on the iHeartRadio app by searching FSR.
Now let's get this party started.
You're listening to Fox Sports Radio.
This doesn't seem mathematically possible, Mike Harmon.
I'm going to tell you that
this does not seem mathematically possible.
What's that, buddy?
Villanova shot 32% from the floor tonight.
Yep.
Okay? 32%. They were 13 of 50 from three-point range. They took 50 threes against Syracuse tonight. They were 13 of 50.
Yeah.
32% from the floor. 26% from three-point range, took 50 threes and missed, and they still beat Syracuse by 14 points. That doesn't seem mathematically possible, that you can have a game like that and do it. It really doesn't, but that's what happened.
Well, extra point per bucket. I mean, you make half of your field goals are three-point shots? Yeah. They only shot six free throws on the night, too. Why? Because they were chucking three-point shots all night.
You're not going to the line a lot when you're shooting threes.
But I mean, in the old NBA, pre-2020-2021, you could do those things. You'd get to the line a lot.
Villanova.
Or I guess 21-22. Sorry, no. You got to advance the year.
Well, look, and they out-rebound Syracuse by 20. They get 28 offensive rebounds. Syracuse has 11. I mean, every time they'd miss a shot, Villanova would get the ball, and nothing burns me more than when I watch a game and I go, how do we give up so many offensive rebounds? How do we seem like we have the guy blocked out and we're all standing around and the other guy goes 1-on-3 and makes the play and is able to get the ball? How does that happen? How do three guys stand around and watch and one guy goes and makes play? I feel like I'm back in the soccer field when I go, how do the three of you sit around that ball and the one girl comes in and is able to knock it free? How does that happen? I'd coach college basketball the same way I coach 13-year-old girls in soccer.
Ladies, how does that happen?
Tell me how that happens. I don't understand how that happens.
No, well, Madeline's coach for soccer is very economical with his words. Usually it's the girl's name with maybe one or two other words. That's it. With Madeline, it's literally just the inflection in his voice. Says everything. Well, it's kind of like that, yeah.
Well, no, and kind of like when you're at home, when you say your daughter's name. Madeline, oh, hey, something fun is coming. Yeah. Madeline, I'm walking away. I'm not going to like what's going to be said to me right now. Just the inflection works that way.
Well, it's funny. We were out doing some drills on Saturday. He was coaching up his other squad. They were finishing a game, and she did one piece of the drill, and I just heard it from across the field, just, Maddie. And we weren't working with him. Or like he just saw that she had an errant shot and clearly didn't do her normal follow through. And
just, dude, you're not even coaching me right now.
He's got to be 200 yards away. He's putting the stuff back in the shed, right? You got to put the corner flags away and everything. And he just does it once. And she just puts her head down because my worst shot of the day. And he happened to, there he is.
Aren't you coaching another game? Yes. You just coach that.
Batty. Just this low guttural scream, and she's like, I got it. It's kind of like home.
Sure, exactly. When you're so near, you come in, yeah, but I say your name. If I say your full name, you are in a lot of trouble.
Oh, if that middle name shows up.
Oh, yeah.
We used to run. I mean, we were like Dio, run to the hills, man. Because
Iron Maiden. That's Iron Maiden.
I'm sorry. Wrong. Had Dio.
Maiden
is
Run to the Hills.
Yeah, yeah. So.
Run for your life.
Yeah, that was really the reaction in the house if the middle name came up. It's like, what did I do?
Run to the hill.
What did I break? What went wrong? It's like, what, is something coming back on me from a couple of weeks ago? Okay. Everybody's looking around wondering if the wooden spoon's been pulled for use.
Boy.
I mean, problems.
Yeah. Oh, my grandmother had the big wooden spoon. Never saw her use it, though, but just had to pull it out. Just had to show you that she had the spoon. I'm just showing you I got it. Okay. I'm not going to use it. I'm just showing you I got the wooden spoon. Okay, Graham, you got the wooden spoon.
I can never say it. I'll just say it this way. We called that Tuesday.
Yeah,
and it didn't, and it got used.
Well, you know, but eventually the wooden spoon
and broke it over you, and then you turn and go, ha ha! Which was even worse.
I have to credit my cousin Amy for breaking the wooden spoon barrier of being afraid in my house, because there would, you know, the wooden spoon was always Graham had the wooden spoon, Graham had the wooden spoon. And then one time, Amy, who was 10 years younger than I am, and so I think I must have been like, you know, I don't know, like 16 and she was 6 or something like that. And it's not like at 16 I was getting threatened with the wooden spoon. But she was running around, she did something, and my grandfather says, Graham's got the wooden spoon. And Graham just had the wooden spoon because she was making ravioli. And Amy looks and goes, she's not going to hit me with that. She's cooking with it. And I was like, oh, yeah. She's not going to hit you with something she's cooking with. Oh, I'm okay. I can do
that's
whatever.
That's a pretty good strategy.
Yeah. How did I not realize that for all these years? That, oh, she's cooking with it. She's not going to ruin the wooden spoon. She's going to keep cooking with it. Oh, now I get it. Okay. All right, that's all.
Well, especially if it's already been in the sauce. Now he'd have a problem because she doesn't want to stain the clothes. So now it's doubly unlikely that it's going to be utilized.
Graham, you're only making yourself do laundry. Yeah. All right, you want it? Okay, you want to use it. You're doing the laundry. Here, let me go get the shout. So when you use it, I could just spray it right on the clothes. So what? There we go. I fixed it. I'll go put this in the laundry now. It'll work out. Right now, 8:20 to go in the fourth quarter. Lakers are running away from the Celtics. 101-86 has been a big night for LeBron James. Russell Westbrook now, 24 points and 10 assists. Anthony Davis finally getting it together a little bit. 15 points and 11 rebounds. We'll have more.
A lot of people
game.
calling him out over the
course. Oh, it's like his time
this
now.
Game.
It's like now,
good
it's
Lord.
Like now. It's like now has been the, oh, now let's all get on Anthony Davis. Right, it's like, who's the guy we need to get on to play better? Anthony Davis. Let's get on him. Now it's like he's the guy that we're all like, you're not as good as you need to be. You're not the guy. Look, I'll tell you the issue with Anthony Davis, and it's pretty simple. And I always go back, and you know, I got to mention this to him next time he comes on the show with us, is that, you know, we have Rick Bucher on every week on the show. And, you know, Bucher comes on, and I remember, this has got to be 10 years ago now, I remember talking, I think it was about Allen Iverson. We were having a conversation. It was like maybe when Iverson, it was right when he was at the end, and he was going to be, you know, he was going to come off the bench or something like that.
When he was in Denver?
No. It was after that. It was Memphis, right? He was with Memphis at the end, and he was going to come off the bench. It was weird. It was at the end of his career, and we were talking about Allen Iverson. I remember him saying to me, you know, here's the thing. Allen Iverson loves basketball. Allen Iverson loves to play, and he loves to play, and he loves to succeed, and he loves winning. And there's not enough guys in the NBA that love winning enough. And this is why some of the same players win all the time. You know, they all like the lifestyle and they like winning, but there's no guys who burn to win. And it's either they don't realize it or they're just not interested, because they can still be great players and do everything they can to win. But it's just not something that permeates through a lot of the star players. And every time I think of Anthony Davis, I think about that with Rick Bucher, because Anthony Davis is sometimes motivated to shut everybody up, right? He's sometimes motivated to say, what a great game, what a great run of 3-4 games in a row by AD, and you know, like this, I'm going to shut people up for a little while. And then he kind of falls into his stretch of using his athleticism and just playing to play, and he winds up having games with, you know, 17 points and 7 rebounds, which is what he, you know, he should be getting in the first half. And you see the talent level he has, and how, you know, nobody else can move like him, the size he has in the NBA, and that's really what it is Anthony Davis is content with being the player that he is. He's not someone that burns to be a super duper star. He's not someone who burns to win like LeBron James. Because look, you could hate on LeBron James all you want and talk about LeBron and how, look, he's someone that he should make this decision. But LeBron wants to win. He's a guy who knows, I want to be measured by NBA finals. And it's not so much winning the finals, but getting to the finals and championships. And okay, so that's why I can always forgive a lot of LeBron's foibles and some of his shortcomings, because it's all motivated by him trying to win. And, you know, the thing is, you can only want it so much for other people. Other people have to want it themselves. And when I see Anthony Davis, I see Lamar Odom, who was an every other game guy. And even though talent-wise, he was one of the top three most talented players in the league, a Lamar Odom season was one game. Look at this. He's off the bench. He's got 19 points, 14 rebounds, 11 assists. The next game, it's 4 points. He's 2 out of 8 from the floor. It's 1 rebound and 4 fouls. And the next game, it's 5 points and 1 rebound, and he only shoots the ball 3 times. Then the next game after that, he's got 15 points and 14 assists. I mean, that was Lamar Odom. And Lamar Odom was someone who always was happy being who he was. He was happy getting out of the life he had before and a difficult life and getting to the NBA and doing pretty well. Always remember him being interviewed in L.A., them asking him about his career. Hey, you know, do you think you could be doing more? I'm saying, I think I'm doing pretty good. You know, I'm going to defend myself. I think I'm doing pretty good. But that's kind of who Lamar Odom was. Relying on the ability I have and what I'm doing is going to be good enough. And that's kind of who I am. Not realizing that next level you need to hit is a mental level. And it's about being able to dominate every single time you step on the floor. Because Lamar Odom could have done that. And the same thing for Anthony Davis. Look, when he was younger, he could show up and score 30 points. And he did. And we saw it. It was, oh my God, he's so great. Now a little bit older, take care of your body a little bit more. Come out being the number one, because this clearly is your team. And LeBron is ready for you to be the number one and LeBron to be the number two. And it didn't work. So they had to go out and get Russell Westbrook and change. They can't run the offense through you because you're not someone that every night goes out with a killer instinct to go win the games. You know, Anthony Davis is a guy that's happy being who he is, and that's never going to change. You're never going to motivate a guy who's going to decide to say, hey, you know what? This is who I am. It's always got to come from within. James Harden, I give him all the credit in the world because he was a guy that he could have played his whole career and been a big scorer, and that's it. But he reinvented himself midway through his career and became a player who understands the value of him as a playmaker, and suddenly his assist jumped, and I respect the hell out of him for that. Now, him quitting on his team and getting out, that's a big issue, but he's someone that saw, I need that inner motivation to be better. Giannis is another player. Hey, they're saying all this crap about me. It's time I put this narrative to rest. And 50 points in the deciding game of the NBA Finals, leading the Bucks and dragging them through to the NBA title. I love that about players who do that, but I don't see that in Anthony Davis. I don't see Anthony Davis saying, get on my back and follow me. And LeBron is clearly okay with AD being that guy. You wouldn't see that hardly ever, right? LeBron is the guy. He's the most alpha of alpha males. But right now he knows, hey, I wanted AD here because he could be the guy. There's not a big man like him in the game with the skill set he has. And he still is a guy that kind of shows up and plays and uses his talent, but doesn't have that extra bit. And that's probably what's disappointed LeBron James more than anything, is that he's still trying to get it out of him. And you're still not getting it out of AD. It's just not happening.
Still above his career average for scoring and right at his career average, 0.2 off in rebounding. All of that works in terms of the analysis, and we talk about it all the time, and even going into other sports, particularly the NFL, is sometimes you don't love it. You know, it becomes the job. I happen to be here, and I'm good. And there are moments where Anthony Davis still takes over games, but it's not the consistency, I guess, that you would like and perhaps Laker fans would like. And not everybody's built that way, right? I mean, LeBron James, with the injuries and when he recruited Anthony Davis, yes, it was in theory to find his guy to become the number one. And it looked for a while like Anthony Davis was ready to take on that mantle, right? That he was ready to assume, here's the scepter and crown, and now I'm going to take over. All right, not that, you know, LeBron's going to give up the king nickname that he gave himself, but you get my point. The larger issue is just, you know, he's a guy that health-wise you also have concerns throughout the year, so you're also trying to figure out how to make sure you're maximizing his time on the court. How many scares do you get in a normal 3 to 5 game block with Anthony Davis when he's on the ground writhing in pain? And then you're wondering, is this an MLS move that he needs a breather? So he's just rolling around and take it, or is this something that's going to become a bigger issue? And as you go on as a big man in your career, well, those become even more pronounced. So, you know, you're trying to find that formula.
If he would just find a way to do it, and it's the most frustrating thing because it's about just flip the switch, man. Just go and decide this is who I want to be. Some things are just that easy. You can decide overnight what kind of player you want to be. I'm going to flip the switch.
Did you take a Tony Robbins class this morning?
You like that, huh? I was stuck in the elevator.
Did you walk over some coals or what?
No, but you can decide that. You can decide what kind of player you want to be.
Shia LaBeouf. Make your dreams come true.
But he doesn't do it. But that's the most frustrating part is that it's a mental thing. It's not he lacks the skill. He lacks the wherewithal and the court sense and everything. No. He's got it all. You just have to say, oh, I get it. And sometimes people just don't understand what it means to flip that switch. I don't get it. What do you mean? I'm trying my hardest. I'm going out there running up and down the floor. I don't get it. And then it's about putting in extra work. It's about wanting to be dominant. It's about playing every minute like we need these points and with a greater sense of urgency and a greater desire to want to do it and not walk through, 5 to 7 minutes of the game at a time. I mean, some people just don't get that's what it takes, and they think they're doing I'm doing great. I never even knew that. And that's the most frustrating part, because it's all about just deciding I'm gonna go do it, and I'm gonna go do it right now.
I think you're just mad that he didn't demand his way out to become a Knick.
No, we're okay. We won tonight. We're good. We're good now. We're just going to bench everybody we signed in the offseason, and the Knicks are going to be back to being the team they were last year. All the changes, we're getting rid of everybody. Kemba Walker out. Mitchell Robinson out. All these guys are out. We're just going to replace them with the guys who played last year. All these new moves, forget it. We don't need them. We're going back to who we were. That's all it is. Twitter at How About a Fresca. Mike gets swollen dome. The Jason Smith Show with my best friend, Mike Harmon. Coming up next, we got a big story out of the NFL because there's a lot of quarterbacks getting criticized, and rightfully so, some not rightfully so. But there's one guy who has escaped criticism that absolutely 100%, no, it's time to understand that this guy could be a bust. And it's not Zach Wilson. It's next right here, Fox.
Be sure to catch live editions of the Jason Smith Show with Mike Harmon weekdays at 10 p.m. Eastern, 7 p.m. Pacific on Fox Sports Radio and the iHeartRadio app.
Oh, now this I dig.
Oh, yeah.
Why is Queen still playing? Fox Sports Radio, the Jason Smith Show with my best friend, Mike Harmon. Still a couple minutes left in the fourth quarter. Lakers putting the finishing touches on a win over the Celtics. We'll have more on the Frank Vogel hot seat meter coming up in a few minutes. But, this first, because we got a big NFL story on the way, too. It looks like, judging by all reports, the Mets are likely going to hire Buck Showalter as their new manager. He is scheduled to interview tomorrow, and Showalter is the guy that clearly is the front runner, and I think as long as he has a great interview, he'll wind up getting it. Steve Cohen likes him. Max Scherzer likes him. And you know what? I'll tell you what, Mike Harmon. I am 100% in complete agreement with every single fan that says, yes, go hire Buck Showalter. Because this is not just about the Mets, because this is about what it means to manage a baseball team. And clearly we're gonna get through the lockout, and we're gonna wind up playing games, and the Mets are gonna win
sure,
the World Series.
Course.
But
all of that until that last point.
Because we have Scherzer. Sure, we have Scherzer now. Are you kidding? That's how I'm ending all my rough conversations with people. Yeah, and your Jets suck. I go, yeah, but we have Scherzer. And they go, what? Yeah, because we got Scherzer, and that's what's important, you jerk. That's how I end stuff. But with the two schools of thought for managers, right? There's always the managers who manage. They know how to manage the players. They know how to manage situations. They've been around the game a long time. They understand motivating players. And then there's the young manager that everybody wants and understands sabermetrics. And hey, I'm just going to put out whatever lineup the front office wants because I'm working sabermetrics with everybody. And that's kind of the two managers that you have. And it's really easy to know, okay, if you know your team at all, you know what kind of manager your team needs, right? Because you could talk about sabermetrics all you want and all, but if you're a 320 hitter, you're a 320 hitter, right? If you're a pitcher that strikes out 250 batters a year, you strike out 250 batters a year, right? You can do sabermetrics all you want, but you know what? Right-handed relievers are going to get out left-handed hitters, right? It doesn't always work. Oh, the lefty's going to get that. But there's two schools of thought on that. And clearly, look, Buck Showalter, 100%. Because as you can see, the Mets need somebody that, number one, knows how to manage in New York, yes. And mainly, when you have knuckleheaded stories coming up, like the Mets do every year, and other teams have knuckleheaded stories coming up every year. Oh, Lindor and McNeil fought over the size of a rat in the dugout. Baez and Lindor booing the fans. You need somebody that can say, okay, this is knucklehead, but I can handle it, and not let it mushroom out of control. Where Luis Rojas was just the most invisible of figures during all of this time. The Lindor McNeil rat, he was at the bottom of where his involvement was with this. With the booing, we didn't talk about the manager at all. This is where the manager needs to be someone that, hey, I can guide you through this because I understand and know what it means. New York's a pressure cooker. You guys are knuckleheads. Let me deal with it, and I can do it and make you move on. I mean, certain teams need certain managers. You can't just say, okay, here's a guy, and we want a square peg round hole it, because it's almost like an NFL situation where you're bringing in a head coach who's got this system that he likes on defense. You know, I won't say a guy's name, but I'll say his name is Schmabert Schmala, right, who's got this great, oh, we got this great scheme on defense, and I'm going to play my defensive linemen 60% of the time and have guys rotating in and out, and then you wind up getting boat raced every week and you're one of the worst defenses in the NFL. Why? Because you're going scheme over player. And you decide, my scheme is going to work. Well, why is your best player, your defensive tackle, on the field 60% of the time? It doesn't make any sense why you're doing that. That's stupid. But when you go scheme over player, that makes things difficult. You're taking a coach and saying, okay, now go coach this team that's not really made for you to coach. And it's the same way in baseball, where it's, hey, we're going to give you the manager, and you really shouldn't be managing this team. Like Luis Rojas should have been managing the Mets last year. They need all kinds of stuff. You got a brand new owner. You got brand new star you signed. You got brand new everything. This is New York. You need somebody. You need somebody to be able to be the guy that can control things. You don't always need somebody to say, hey, I brought in the right reliever for this, and we got this guy out here. Certain teams need certain things. And whether you're the Dodgers or the Yankees, you know what you need. You know, the Yankees know we needed Aaron Boone for a long time because he's a guy that he knows what it's like to play here. He's not going to get rattled. If he makes mistakes, he knows how to deal with it. He's not going to lose his cool. He's been the right manager for them for a while because the Yankees are a playoff team every single year. Some teams need one thing, other teams need the other, and that's why, yeah, a team like the Mets, you need Buck Showalter, right? You need somebody that's gone through it. A team like the Angels that's like trying to sign all these star players, you don't need somebody who's on the cutting edge of being, oh, no, you need somebody like Joe Maddon who has been through it and understands I'm managing star players and egos and everything that goes along with it. Certain teams need certain managers, and this is why, hey, Buck Showalter, who's been everywhere across social media today, and I expect him to be the manager tomorrow, that's what the Mets need to do.
Yeah, I look at it as I don't think you need to look any further than the 9 years he had in Baltimore. And we know what the first reaction, right? You do the word association. I say Orioles. Most folks are just going to yell suck, right? 9 years there. The fact that he was only 15 games under 500 is amazing. With mm-hmm. the talent and lack thereof, right? Hamstrung by that terrible deal they gave Chris Davis and all of those. I mean, obviously, that's a even more recent invention, at least the bad end of it for Chris Davis is after Buck Showalter was gone. But the idea that you have a guy that has led players through adversity, who is already been on that big stage going back to his time on Seinfeld and with the New York Yankees. I don't know which was bigger, but the idea that he was in that pressure cooker where every decision, every little piece of news found its way to the back of the fish wrap. He's been there, done that. You've got a new owner who needs someone to just, well, teach him about what he doesn't know. Just as you would young players in your clubhouse. So, yeah, Buck Showalter being back at the helm of a major league team, sadly, it'll make your team really stable and potentially good, which is hell for me for 6 months of the year. But the reality is that when you're looking around and you're like, all right, retreads, new guys, whatever else, here's a guy that makes sense for the marketplace that's looking for that extra piece, an extra boost.
Well, somebody else who always makes sense, he's a big part of the market, he's a big part of this show, been a longtime friend of the show. I just quoted him less than a half hour ago, a big basketball nugget that he dropped on me 10 years ago that I've never forgotten. Fox Sports 1, NBA analyst and insider. You can follow him on Twitter, at Rick Bucher. It is the aforementioned Rick Bucher. Rick, what's happening, man?
A 10-year-old nugget. The interest that thing has earned. My goodness. I will be sending out a bill. What was it?
It was you and I, because we were talking about Anthony Davis. Lakers win tonight. Yeah. They just finished off the win over Boston. And, you know, now all the criticism of how much does Anthony Davis burn to win? You know, could he be a better player? And, you know, you did the big article for the app about what other GMs think of Anthony Davis. And I'll say, I'll never forget what Rick Bucher told me about 10 years ago. We were talking about Allen Iverson, and it was him near the end of his run with Memphis when he played those three games. And you said to me, Allen Iverson loves basketball. He loves playing. He loves competing. He loves winning. And you know what? There's not enough guys in the league like that, because there's so many guys that like playing and like win and like the lifestyle, but being driven to be as great as they can be, there's not enough guys like that.
Yeah. No. It's kind of natural, and it's not exclusive to the NBA. I do think it's exclusive to guys who are just given the unique physical gifts of being an NBA player. And in many cases, they get dragged into playing the game because of their height and because they have the potential of earnings and a lifestyle that they might not, or they don't believe that they could achieve any other way. So they're doing it for what the game can give them as opposed to what they can give to the game. And as a result, as soon as they get what the game can give them, as in terms of millions of dollars and the celebrity and everything else, that desire to accomplish something in the game is that was never on the radar. That was never the be all and end all. And that becomes increasingly evident as you go forward with guys that you look at, go, man, that guy's really talented and he's really well compensated, and where is the rest of it, as opposed to the guys who just come in and they would play regardless of what the game gives them?
All right, Rick, so we see the big win, and for a third quarter they show up, all that excitement, but turn back the clock just less than 24 hours ago, LeBron James addressing the criticism of Frank Vogel. Is he cracking the door open to the possibility of a coup?
Yeah, well, we shall see. I mean, certainly he's I don't know if he's cracking it open. I think he's leaving it open. he in no way is trying to close the door on the idea of Frank Vogel no longer being the head coach. The problem is, and I would imagine that LeBron understands this too, is you can't just talk about who you're firing or getting rid of a coach. You have to have an answer as to who comes in and does a better job, who comes in and is able to deal with the expectations and the personalities that you're dealing with. Because I said it from the very beginning, you know, Frank Vogel is a good coach. And if he had the ability, if he had a group of players that were all we're willing to do whatever is necessary in order to win a championship, in order for us to bring this home for the Lakers, like the team that they put together 2 years ago in the bubble, all those guys had something to prove. Well, and very few of them were, I mean, honestly, they weren't stars. They weren't all stars. They didn't have reputations to protect. They didn't expect to be treated a certain way. That's the great distinction between this team and that team, is that if he could mix and match, he could play Russell Westbrook when he's on, and he could sit him in fourth quarter when he's off. He could do the same thing with Carmelo Anthony. If he could do it with Anthony Davis, I'm not going to put LeBron James in that camp, because I think for the most part, LeBron has still been their best player, considering he's almost 37 years old. But he can't mix and match. He can't sit Russ Westbrook. He can't sit Carmelo Anthony. The fact that he's sitting Rajon Rondo is probably stretching his authority in that locker room. So that's the problem that Frank has. And I'm with, you know, Charles or anybody else, to put the blame on Frank as if somehow you could make this team better than what it showed it to be simply because of the names is unfair to him, because he doesn't have a free hand, because he doesn't have the ability. And I don't know whether he could or he couldn't, but the fact of the matter is you can't, you lose, you're going to lose Russell Westbrook. You're going to lose the locker room. You're going to lose. He doesn't have the authority to be able to utilize this roster the way he might think best, even if he had a plan to do that.
Well, but that's the way it works, Rick, right? Because look, these are LeBron's players. These are the guys LeBron was comfortable
right.
with. These are the veterans LeBron wanted. The first move is not going to be we're going to jettison the players LeBron wanted. The first move is going
right.
to be we're going to change the coach, and then we'll change sure. the players if we have to.
Sure. And to your point, and if anybody wants to say, you know, that LeBron owes it to support Frank because and Rob Pelinka because he had a hand in forging this roster, I'm not going to argue with you. I would say that, yeah, he does. But LeBron has never been that way. I found it very interesting just watching at the end of the game when LeBron comes off and Frank Vogel gives him the high five or the congratulations, and LeBron kind of just like there was no celebration there. There was no and what I thought should have been, considering that this was one of the best games that I've seen the Lakers play, and I do think that they are gaining a little bit of momentum. Russ Westbrook is starting to play and have the role that they expected him to play, at least during the regular season. But I just didn't see LeBron keeping Frank at arm's length does nothing for this team. Like, it would be, I believe, far different if LeBron was putting his chips and his support behind Frank, simply because who are you going to get? Like, there's no coach out there with a ring that you can go hire, that you can go bring in, that is going to have the stature and the presence and the personality to deal with this group that LeBron put together. So I believe it would benefit LeBron and the Lakers as a whole if he was supportive of Frank. But quite clearly by his comments the other day and just by the body language that I've seen, he's choosing not to do that. And I mean, honestly, how many times have we seen LeBron do that in any instance where he spoke up and he supported the coach? I'm not saying he's working against him, but it's never been in his wheelhouse to go out of his way to say, no, he's a great coach and he's doing everything necessary and we should ride with him. If you guys can recall a time where he said that about any coach that he's had, I mean,
there's a reason why he's had eight coaches, Rick, in his 19 years. The best player in the game's had eight coaches.
I was just going to say, I can cite a number of examples when he went the other direction.
Yeah.
go back to Miami and how that started. So, yeah.
Exactly. But, it is the nature of LeBron. And that's why it's – I mean, I think we talked about this the last time I was on, about this idea of LeBron – is it time for LeBron to be the player coach, official or unofficial? Is that the solution? And one of the interesting things – and I can't remember if I shared this with you, but, like, supposedly – well, the league will tell you unofficially that they don't allow player coaches. But it's not written in the CBA specifically that way.
So it
would get very interesting. The feeling is that if anybody decided to anoint a player coach, they'd say that's undue benefit. You can't have a player controlling the minutes of other players, and that there is a clause in there about players having unfair benefits, and they would utilize that to try to stop that. But on the other hand, I mean, as in talking to GMs about this subject, I can't tell you how many of them said, isn't he kind of like, hasn't he been a player coach for a while now?
Yeah.
I mean,
in a minute.
He just doesn't have a title. But other than that, he's kind of been playing that role.
He's on Twitter at Rick Bucher. That is at Rick Bucher, Fox Sports 1 analyst. Check out his On the Ball podcast. Do the Warriors get real aggressive to add another piece? Again, check it out on Twitter at Rick Bucher. Rick, as always, buddy, appreciate it, my friend. We'll talk to you next week.
Gentlemen, always a pleasure.
Thanks, Rick.
Be sure to catch live editions of The Jason Smith Show with Mike Harmon weekdays at 10 p.m. Eastern, 7 p.m. Pacific.
Hey, what's up, everybody? It's me, three-time Pro Bowler LeVar Arrington, and I couldn't be more excited to announce a new podcast called Up On Game. What is Up On Game, you ask? Along with my fellow Pro Bowler, TJ Houshmandzadeh, and Super Bowl champion, yep, that's right, Plexico Burress. You can only name a show with that type of talent on it, Up On Game. We're going to be sharing our real-life experiences loaded with teachable moments. Listen to Up On Game with me, LeVar Arrington, TJ Houshmandzadeh, and Plexico Burress on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts from.
Fox Sports Radio, The Jason Smith Show with my best friend, Mike Harmon. And if you think that once a player takes off the uniform, hey, they're clearly, I'm going to go on TV and I'm going to be down the middle and I'm going to tell you what I think about teams, I'm not going to play favorites. Let me introduce you to NBA Hall of Famer James Worthy, Laker legend who hosts the pre- and post-game show on Spectrum Sportsnet here in Los Angeles. Lakers beat the Celtics tonight. It was a great effort by the Lakers. It was a great game by LeBron James. They win 117-102. This is the open to the show. All right. Geeter McGee is the host. Geeter, who comes on the show all the time talking about the Lakers. And right away, they begin the postgame show. Let's just kick it to James Worthy because he's got something special to say. Let's hear it.
Big game, James Worthy.
We got that Celtic gas tonight. Yes.
Oh, yeah.
We got him. Go back to Bean Town.
Oh, that was
Take
nice.
Take the Boston Scrod with you.
It is. Scrod.
Yeah, Boston Scrod. Boston Scrod Delicious apparently is a scrod. Very popular dish. I didn't know that. Just the clapping. We got that Boston ass tonight.
Clapping and lighting a cigar, and you just see at the desk, they absolutely lose it.
I mean, it was good. Oh my God. I mean, that, and you know, and the funny thing is that I worked with Worthy when I first came out to LA, and I worked in production, and I worked on because he was one of the original hosts of Fox Sports Net before Fox Sports One. This is like 20 years ago, and he came on and he would just tell stories like that all the time for no reason. He would just tell you, he would say stuff like, you know, hey, Jason. Yeah, James. Hey, so in this next segment, what video do you need to support your point in this? What do you need? He goes, yeah, let me tell you. I was always the first guy the next day after a game in the airport with a beer and a hot dog waiting to get on the flight. Okay, thanks, James. I don't know what you want me to do with that, but okay. Like, he would say things like that. He would just say it. So this is not surprising to see him just clap and go, God, Dad, Celtic ass tonight. Let's hear it one more time. All right, cue it up and play it again, AD. It's too good not to hear again. I mean, it's so, hey, big game. Go James, ahead, say what you want to say.
Big game, James Worthy.
We got that Celtic ass tonight. Yes, we got him. Go back to Bean Town.
Oh, that was
Take
nice.
Take the Boston Scrod with you.
One of the top 50 players of all time. I mean, because look, when you break it all down, it's always going to be defined that era. It's Lakers-Celtics, right? 17 titles each, all of those things. So it's that pride all these years later. Because, I mean, what are we talking? James Worthy's been done for almost 30 years. And
it's like he played tonight. No. It's like he came off the floor. Hey, I'm really emotional.
I'm lighting a cigar and getting after it.
He pulls a cigar out of his pocket, just lights it. Yeah, I ran up and down the floor in the fourth quarter with a cigar in my back pocket, so I'm glad I didn't break it. Yeah, we got that ass tonight. Go on, answer me questions. I'll say whatever you want me to say. And just puffing away on the cigar.
It's absolutely beautiful.
That is outstanding. And Tyshirt, we're going to make a drop of that and use it throughout the next hour of the show.
All right.
Just going to need to ask how the Lakers did tonight. You're going to play the James Worthy.
Bing bong.
Fox Sports Radio, the Jason Smith Show with my best friend, Mike Harmon. Yeah, the Knicks did win tonight, so take that. We'll have more from the Lakers and more on a guy we have to think might really be a bust in the NFL. I know it's heresy that I'm going to say what I'm going to say next, but he really may be a bust.
I'm very, very excited about it.
It's next.